Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing well, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. We have some CrimeCon stuff coming up.
Yes, if you don't have your tickets yet, then use our discount to get your tickets. Go to crimecon.com, and when you're registering, they'll have a little field for a code. You'll want to use GenY19. That's GENWHY19.
And I'll be at True Crime Podcast Festival. July 13th, Marriott, downtown Chicago. Their website is tcpf2019.com. Go out there and get your tickets.
And also, if you are planning to be at either our Manchester or London meetups this July, then pay attention to our social media because we're releasing tickets, I believe, on the 22nd of February.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling T-shirts from a booth at your local farmer's market or dishing out handmade crafts online, Shopify's POS system manages it all. Unite your in-person and online business with a trusted platform that supports your retail hustle. Get started with hardware tailored to your needs, from payments on the go to full-scale retail setups, with round-the-clock support to keep your sales smooth as silk. Do the smart thing for retail. Go with Shopify. For a limited time, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/wondery, all lowercase. Take your business to new heights. Visit shopify.com/wondery today. That's shopify.com/wondery.
when you're a kid, Aaron, you listened to a lot of alternative music, right?
Oh, of course.
I listened to, you know, KMFDM and Ministry and metal like Slayer and stuff like that. You know, obviously Skinny Puppy is one of our favorite bands in the goth industrial sort of scene. Did you ever do any role playing or anything when you were a kid?
I would say no.
Well, I was actually kind of a skate punk, did drugs and drank a lot at a very early age. And then by my sophomore year in high school was about the time that I cut down on my drinking and cut down on my drug use. And then I ended up meeting some friends when I got kicked out of the high school I was at. And at my new school, I met some friends that were very much into role playing. They got me playing a game called Vampire the Masquerade. It's where you role play that you're the actual vampire. You're not a hero hunting a vampire. You are the monster. And it's a very dark and gloomy game, but it was super fun. And it was my actual initiation to role playing and D&D type games. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
We're talking about Rod Farrell. This case is also known as the Vampire Murders.
This all starts in the 1990s, at about the same time I was actually playing Vampire the Masquerade. It's in Kentucky, Murray, Kentucky, which is very much the Bible Belt.
So Rod Farrell is the topic, really, of tonight's episode, and he didn't know his dad ever, I don't think. His mother met his father when they were in high school, and then they got married, but at some point she had Rod and her husband had left. So it was almost like they started off as high school sweethearts, but then it just dissolved. And he never had any interest in his son's life. I think his name was Rick. From a young age, Rod seemed very much interested in death and the occult. And as he got older, this just escalated, didn't it?
Well, even his mom was into some of that stuff and exposed him to vampire lore and more of the goth side of society. And he embraced it, no pun intended.
And this isn't really surprising. You have areas that are such as Murray, Kentucky, that, you know, at least back at the time was a dry county. May still be. I haven't looked it up. But it's the kind of place where if you're an outcast, maybe you meet other outcasts and you kind of join together, right?
Well, yeah. I think of our teenage years, we were definitely outcasts because we had a unique set of interests than sports and, you know, regular things. So Kentucky, it was bad enough being in the Midwest, you know, Kansas City, being a skateboarder. I can't imagine what it was like being a somewhat goth, dark vampire kid in Kentucky.
So some people are probably unfairly judged for the way they look or what the music they listen to, etc. But then there are always some bad eggs. And in this case, Rod seemed destined for something much different than the other outcasts. The other outcasts, at least in Murray at the time, were vampires. And that's kind of odd to say because, I mean, I grew up with a fascination of horror and I read the books and watched the movies, but I never felt like I wanted to dress up as a vampire. There literally was a clan of vampires in Murray, and one of the vampire leaders was Jaden.
Yeah, I guess he would sire other vampires and claim them as his own. So it's like they're children, and that would create a bond between you and your sired child.
And sometimes the sires could be other family members, they could be friends, or even people who were just looking for a different life.
By the way, to sire a vampire, at least in this group, you would have to drink each other's blood or mix your blood and drink that.
So they would make cuts with razor blades usually on their arms, and then they would each take turns drinking blood.
This was a thing with these kids. And you have to realize that a lot of these kids are coming from broken homes. They're coming from very low-income families. They're looking for escapism. Some of them have undiagnosed mental illnesses. Some of them are cutting.
Now, in September 1995, at 15 years old, Jaden and Rod met. And according to Jaden, he instantly connected with Rod. I guess he said that when he looked into Rod's eyes, he saw himself. January of 1996 is when Jaden brought Rod into his vampire clan, and they drank each other's blood in an old Salem cemetery. That's a magical moment.
Yeah, they hit it off. And again, if you're an outcast in this town and you meet somebody of similar interests, you're going to form a bond pretty quick.
Now, as you know, there is a lot of misunderstood ideas about the occult, and I imagine about vampires. And so when it comes down to it, you have a lot of people just looking at these kids who act like they're vampires and thinking they're crazy or they're evil. Yet Jaden seemed to have, I guess, a pretty strong philosophy about things and did not like violence.
And if you go to any big city like New York or LA, there is a huge goth and vampire scene. Now, I'm not going to mix the two because I'm sure there's a South Park episode that addresses this, but it's huge out there. When you come to the Midwest or a southern state, you're getting handfuls now.
So over months, really, Rod started to challenge Jaden. I mean, the sense that I got was that Rod was really embracing the vampire culture, but I think he also felt like he could do it better.
Well, and Rod had a lot of other issues and baggage going on, and he wasn't exactly, I don't know, stable. So he's going to be very impulsive. And if he thinks somebody is weaker than him, well, he's going to act upon that.
Yeah, and that might be where, and we've seen this before, but you have someone who leans toward violence and you have someone else who's more of a pacifist or use violence as a means to an end. But, you know, that could be seen as a weakness. Now, Rod and the other vampires were using drugs. They were partying. They were exchanging blood. But Rod seemed, I guess, wilder. One of the other members in the clan even said the great thing about Rod was you didn't know what you're going to get each day with him. Some days he would be this really nice guy, and other days he would really embrace the darkness. I mean, he didn't know if someone was going to get hurt.
Well, they would cut each other and drink each other's blood. And they said that one day Rod was cutting another group member and like gouged their arm. Like not the typical superficial skin cut, but cut them down to the muscle and then began to drink from the arm.
Yeah, and that bothered Jaden. You only needed to cut enough to release so many ounces of blood, and that's all you needed. Rod was getting a little bloodthirsty, I guess is the way to put it. And because he was challenging Jaden, he could sense that this wasn't going in the right direction. And I don't feel like Jaden ever tried to assert himself. And maybe that was probably also seen as a weakness, but Rod was asserting himself. There's actually some incidents that happen that completely separate the two. And I'm talking about the friendship of Rod and Jaden. We're not going to go into details because it's not necessary, but Rod killed some animals, two different incidents, and Jaden was there for the first one.
Yeah. Rod's life is just in a downward spiral. He's been expelled from school. He's using meth and LSD, and then he decides to start killing animals. Well, Jaden's not cool with this. And a lot of the other group members aren't cool with it either, but they're actually starting to fear Rod a little, and they don't want to say anything.
Well, I think Rod gets the hint because he decides to form his own vampire clan. Rod's new vampire clan consists of Michael Scott Schaefer, Charity Cassie, Dana Cooper, and Scott Anderson.
Anderson is 16 years old and obviously just part of this group. Dana Cooper is 19, but is very unfulfilled with her life and depressed and just floundering. So she wants to start anew. And then you have Charity, who is 16 years old, pretty much Rod's girlfriend at this point. Michael Scott Schaefer is also 16 years old.
Rod has this new clan. He also has a vampire name.
Is it Visago or something?
Visago?
Oh, okay. Sounds like...
I think it's Visago.
Yeah. I thought it was a spaghetti sauce myself.
Yeah, he... Apparently he got the name from a demon.
And he takes on this persona and starts claiming that he's a 500-year-old vampire at this point. But I'm sure if you asked him a history question about something from 500 years ago, he would probably not know the answer.
Well, they didn't have the internet back then, Justin.
Now, they're using a lot of drugs, and LSD is actually one of the main drugs they're using. And if you know anything about it, it's a hallucinogen. And when I think of other cults, you know, LSD cults, the Manson family comes to mind, or Ricky, the acid king of the Knights of the Black Circle, or even the Annie Hamilton Byrne family, which we need to cover that case in the future, Aaron. Anyways, something about LSD or any hallucinogen, you know, psychedelic, if somebody is sort of the guru or leader, they can easily manipulate others. It makes everyone a little bit more susceptible to influence. So this is just lack of sleep from methamphetamine, LSD. Everyone in this group is sort of feeling the vibe now. And didn't they have a place they would hang out at a lot? It was called like the Vampire Hotel.
Yeah, it was an abandoned house. It was pretty run down, but apparently different teenagers would, you know, get away from their parents, hang out with friends, drink, do drugs.
Kind of a squatter house where people go party. Yeah.
There was a time when Rod had lived in Florida, and while he was there, he met Heather Wendorf. After he went back to Kentucky, they continued to talk by telephone.
Heather, being your, I think, typical angsty teen, was drawn to Rod and complained about her parents and always being disciplined or not being able to talk to boys or whatever the typical things were.
Her parents sucked.
Yeah. And this is your normal teen. So she's telling these things to Rod. And at one point, Rod says, "Do you want your parents dead?" According to Heather, she says no. But that seed is now planted.
Well, but she doesn't know that. I mean, as far as she knows, was he joking? Was he just trying to say, are they this bad?
Yeah.
She doesn't know him that well. This is a person she met briefly. They continued to talk by telephone now and again. It's like glorified pen pals. But one thing we do know about Rod Farrell is he had an effect on people. And I don't know. The one thing that I really took from listening to him was he sounds a hell of a lot like Nicolas Cage.
He has that weird, dry, matter-of-fact kind of tone. And yeah,
almost whispery.
Yeah, it's weird. If you see any old interviews with him, he comes off like a total arrogant jerk. He just comes off like he is God's gift and everyone else is inferior to him.
Well, I don't know if he'd use the phrase God's gift.
Well, this is true.
Well, at some point, though, there's a trip planned for Florida to go and get Heather, because Heather Wendorf has decided she doesn't want to live with her parents anymore. She wants a fresh start. And why not with a vampire clan?
There's a lot of conflicting stories here, but Heather claims to have pretty much zero prior knowledge to any criminal activity. She just thinks they're coming down to pick her up. Meanwhile, Rod and crew, they know that Heather's parents own a Ford Explorer, and there's a whole group of them. So they're thinking, we need a bigger vehicle, right?
Oh, yeah, because Rod's buddy's car is, you know, it's a little small. It's a little sedan.
Yeah, it's like a Buick or something, so it's not comfy.
There were five members in Rod Farrell's clan. One of them doesn't make the trip down to Florida because his mother, Rose Bunch, decided her son needed to be put into therapy, into a treatment program, because she was worried about him.
That was Schaefer, right?
That was Schaefer, Michael Scott Schaefer. So he doesn't make the trip, but he did want to go. Now, one of the things that was discussed, and this is something that got discussed quite often, was they talked about killing people. Oh, this person deserves to die. But according to Schaefer, he said it was always sort of a joking kind of thing, like, ah, but we're not going to do it this week. It'll be next week.
Yeah, they had their sort of list of people that deserve death, and they were obsessed with death. And they played vampire games and whatnot. So it's all part of that vibe.
And felt like they gained powers by being vampires. I know Jaden, and you can find this in documentaries, but he talks about how people like to put down vampires, but vampires are really above humans. You know, a human being would love to be able to read minds. But he said, for a vampire, that's reality. That's not fantasy.
Well, the reality is you take enough LSD, I think you can read anyone's mind.
But I guess what I'm trying to get across here is these vampires were living what we consider a fantasy life, but they had embraced it so much that they made it their reality.
I might catch some flack for this, but I played this vampire game and you need escapism. And what better escape than to fantasize that you're some super powerful 500-year-old vampire with all these different, you know, disciplines that you can read minds or levitate or whatever. This is it. I mean, there's a excellent documentary called Dark On. It's about live-action role-playing. And most people will start watching this documentary and think, oh, I don't want to watch a bunch of idiots out on a battlefield hitting each other and whatever. But when you contrast it with their regular life at a warehouse stacking boxes, you can't wait to get back out on that battlefield. And this is the same. These kids, this is their one out. This is their one thing that makes them happy.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Once you get into the fantasy, it can take over. They just have completely gotten into some fantasy that is everything they wish their reality was. So like we said, Heather Wendorf is in Florida. Eustis, Florida, I think is where it is. Rod and the gang are coming down to get her. What she doesn't know is that Rod has talked about killing the parents.
It's scary. She has no idea.
Rod wants the Explorer. He might want whatever valuables they have because he sure doesn't have any money. He gets there and Heather comes out, right? But then she gets in the vehicle and Rod and Scott get out and they go around the entire house looking in the windows. They're getting a layout and learning who might be in the house, where they're at.
Casing the joint. And they're able to gain entrance through the garage. And that's where they find a crowbar that they take inside with them.
Now, they knew at this point that Heather's dad was asleep on the couch and that her mom was showering. So they had the drop on these people. They had no idea that these two kids were in their house.
Rod will say that he wanted to impale somebody with the crowbar. If you know what a crowbar is, it's a blunt metal object. And you can't really stab somebody with that. It's not going to work. So Rod finds her dad on the couch and starts trying to drive this crowbar into his chest. Like stab him in the heart with it. Well, as you can imagine, that's not going to work. And it's probably just very painful. So the father wakes up and is trying to fight back, and Rod is now just beating him with the crowbar. So at this point, Heather's mother, Naoma, has come down into the kitchen and sees these people in her home. She starts having an argument with Rod. She has a scalding cup of coffee and she throws it on him.
Well, Rod comes at her and she digs her nails into his face. And according to Rod, and he speaks on this later, he couldn't get her nails out of his face. And then he started hitting her in the back of the head with the straight end of the crowbar until she fell.
Again, he doesn't use the crowbar efficiently. And so this must have been a very painful, horrible death that both of them got, because it's a clubbing weapon, not a stabbing weapon. It's kind of weird. I think it's his fantasy of staking somebody or impaling somebody.
So Richard was clubbed over the head about 12 times. Naoma was obviously killed as well with the crowbar. Rod had wanted his buddy Scott to attack Naoma, but Scott had vomited after Richard's death.
Yeah, he froze and was just disgusted. He wasn't there in the same mindset as Rod.
So after the husband and wife were killed, these two teenagers went through the home looking for valuables, and they also grabbed the keys to the Ford Explorer. After they get out of the house, they swap the plates between the two vehicles, the Explorer and then Scott's car. When Rod and Scott got back out to the car, obviously the others saw the state they were in, and Rod is covered in blood. And so you can only imagine what Heather was thinking.
She knows something terrible has happened, and her parents are probably not alive any longer.
And I wonder at that point if she had realized, wait a minute, this guy did ask me at one point if I wanted my parents dead.
And regardless of her answer, she's now feeling pretty responsible. She invited them there. They came and she didn't stop them. She's feeling like she let this happen.
Or the other possibility is now she's just worried about her safety, because if her parents are dead, what might Rod do to her if she says anything?
So they take the Ford Explorer and they travel across the southern states. Their destination, or where they want to get to, is New Orleans. On the way, they are actually pulled over by several police officers. And Rod is actually very well spoken, puts on a smile and says, "Hey, we're just traveling to see a friend." And they carry on their merry way. When they get to New Orleans, it's kind of crawling with cops. And they're out of gas. They only have like a couple bucks, you know, between all of them. And they need to find some money. So they park the Ford Explorer. They're actually approached by two police officers and told to turn around and go somewhere else because they're loitering. So they circle back around a block and they find an empty house and they break in. They steal a bow and arrow and a piggy bank that ends up having about $20 in change in it. Now they got more gas money. And again, this is 1996, so gas is pretty cheap. Now they're getting a bad vibe from New Orleans because of all the cops. For whatever reason, they decide they're going to continue on to Baton Rouge. When they get there, Rod tosses the murder weapon and his bloody clothing. Charity will end up calling her family, trying to get money wired to them. She'll give away their location. Now, Rod is standing right next to her while she's on the payphone, making this phone call. You could argue that Charity knows that this is sort of a setup because her family is asking for her precise location. Why is she there? A bunch of questions. Now, given if you're going to wire money, you need to know where to send it. So I think that they're lying enough where Rod doesn't understand that she's pretty much saying, "I'm in trouble and you need to send the cops."
Well, I think there's a little desperation here too. They need some money.
So her family member will call the police in Baton Rouge and tell them where they're located. So they're at a Howard Johnson's hotel, and the police show up and find them all there. The police say that all of the members seem either high on drugs and unremorseful, except for Heather, who's crying.
Yeah, if you think about it, if she was worried about what might happen to her, if she said or did anything about her, the death of her parents, which I'm sure she knew that's what happened, then seeing the police, that must have been somewhat of a relief. So they're all taken into custody. Now, in order to charge any of these people, they have to take it to a grand jury. And it's a grand jury of 18 citizens from that county. They are there to decide, after hearing the evidence, what to charge each of these individuals with, if anything.
Now, Heather Wendorf, they take pity on her. It's her parents that have been murdered, and they decide to not indict her.
The others, though, they are not released. Scott Anderson was charged with first-degree murder, burglary, and armed robbery. Charity Cassie, charged with third-degree murder, armed robbery, and burglary. Dana Cooper was charged with armed robbery, armed burglary, third-degree murder. And Rod Farrell was charged armed robbery, armed burglary, and two counts of first-degree murder.
Now remember, Rod's the one that actually murdered these people. And Scott Anderson went inside with him, but everybody else stayed outside. So they're charging them all, though.
That's how this goes down. That's how it goes down a lot of times.
Yeah.
Remember, we covered a case where there was a guy that was just a lookout and he was across the street. But I think the way that people look at this is, you knew why they were there. You could have done something. You could have said something. You didn't. So you're part of this.
The real interesting thing is they want to charge them all as adults. Rod and Scott Anderson, they get the worst end of the stick in the trial.
Well, they were inside the home. Before this gets any further, many of these people decide to just tap out. So Scott Anderson, Charity Cassie, and Dana Cooper all plead guilty. Charity Cassie is given 10 and a half years. Dana Cooper is given 17 and a half years, and Scott Anderson was given life in prison. These are really open and shut cases, really. I mean, what can they argue?
Well, I guess the argument is they didn't go there to murder them. They went there to steal a car. That's their main argument.
Yeah, but I don't know who's going to buy that.
Well, and was everyone there in the know of what was going to happen? Rod is the one person that definitely knows what's about to happen because he's the one doing it.
Yeah, and he was definitely unremorseful. Anytime the media was filming him, he was always goofing around. He would blow kisses or snarl at them. I mean, he was always just showing off, like, oh, I'm not scared of you. I'm not worried about what's happening.
Yeah. And in fact, in later interviews, he would say that he wanted all the attention on him to take it off of his friends and clan mates so they wouldn't get in as much trouble. But I think he just really wanted the attention on him.
Okay, so to break this down, though, he did say that none of the women knew and that they weren't involved. They didn't know what he was planning to do in that house. But he did say Scott Anderson knew and was involved.
When he told Scott to kill the woman, I think Scott's privy to the plan at that point.
Now, Rod Farrell had bragged about how he was fascinated with death since he was a young child. He wasn't afraid to die. As trial gets underway, and this is just when they first start, his attorney suddenly interrupts the proceedings and wants to talk to the judge. He lets him know that basically his client may be changing his plea from not guilty to guilty. The thing here is, despite all of Rod's posturing and all of his tough words, he doesn't want to die. The death penalty is hanging over his head, and it gets really messy. I mean, it takes them a long time to sort through and to negotiate and to try and take this off the table.
It's interesting because you have a 16-year-old who's on drugs who killed somebody, killed people, and now you have to argue that he's an adult and should be charged as an adult, and then that his crime is so heinous that it constitutes capital punishment.
So what ends up happening is they can accept his guilty plea, but now it's up to his defense attorney to try and argue that Rod doesn't deserve death, that he deserves life in prison, basically. The prosecutor is going full ahead with, no, he needs the death penalty. Because, I mean, if you think about it, he was unremorseful. He boasted about the murders, and he seemed proud of it. He told everyone he got a rush from it, from killing these people. I know a lot of people would say, oh yeah, he deserves death. We don't need people like that on our planet.
Yeah, he likes to philosophize about what he did and his reasons and all this stuff. And when you watch these prison house interviews, he just comes off as a total ass, really. he's insufferable.
To defend him, they bring in his mom. And she talks about what a terrible mother she had been and how Rod didn't know his dad. He's been abused. He wasn't loved. Society failed him. His family failed him. So don't fail him now. He needs someone to stand up for him finally. This is their list of mitigating circumstances. Justin, when you were thinking about all these so-called mitigating circumstances, did you see anything that made you think at least need to have mercy on him?
There's only one thing. He's 16. You're not allowed to drink until you're 21. You're not allowed to vote until you're 18. But apparently if you do something before the age of 18, the system can treat you however they want. And that's it. That's all there is to it, his age. And when you're 16, you're not an adult yet. So what's the point of having this age, this cutoff, this you're a minor and now you're an adult, if we don't even bother to apply the law as such? I mean, if you can just throw the law out and say, well, we're going to charge you as an adult now. Well, then can I just throw the law out and say, well, I'm going to drink and I'm not 21 yet? No, you can't. So what's the point of having this law of not sentencing minors to life or to death for this case? And that's it. I think he did what he did, and I think it was premeditated. There's no question about it. It is a terrible crime, but we're putting a kid to death. That's the one mitigating factor I have.
Yeah, I think that's all there is. And I do take it seriously when people say someone had a rough childhood, but Rod had many opportunities along the way, I feel, to change his ways. I mean, even when he went into that other vampire clan, Jaden, who brought him in, according to Rod, Jaden taught him everything. Jaden was the one who really explained the life of a vampire. And Jaden had rules. And you might think, well, he's breaking lots of laws while he's doing it, but he wasn't a violent individual. And I just feel like Rod is the one who kept going down that path. And even after he was arrested, even after he saw the way the trial was going, at no point does he ever feel like, I need to own up to what I did. He remains cocky about it. It's like he wants his cake and he wants to eat it too. He wants to be cocky and brag about the murders, but then also say, yeah, I need mercy. It's a total contradiction for me. And I can see why a lot of people didn't want to give him any mercy. Now, I agree with you. At 16 years old, death just, it's not the right way to go. Not for me anyway. But I do get why people get angry when they have to see his smug face and listen to the things he said. You know, they're being asked to show him mercy. They're going to say hell no.
Yeah. Well, and this is the, the inconsistencies with our legal system is other minors will get leniency, will have mercy. Well, his attitude is what they kind of base this whole thing on. And I get it. He's sentenced to death. And of course, you get automatic appeals. And then we have a bunch of Supreme Court cases that come along that say it's kind of unconstitutional to sentence a minor to death.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
So we had that Supreme Court decision stating that you can't sentence, minors under the age of 18 to life in prison. And it's really that whole idea, and we've covered it before, but when you're not an adult yet, your brain isn't quite developed enough yet. In other words, you do a lot of stupid things when you're younger. And that doesn't mean adults don't make stupid decisions, but they should know better because their brains have fully developed. And it's later on when you have this come up, because Rod's sentenced to death. How can they sentence a minor to death? Especially in light of the Supreme Court decision that came along later, which was in, 2012?
Yeah, well, they had commuted his death sentence to a life sentence. But then in 2012, a new Supreme Court decision saying it's unconstitutional to sentence minors to life.
That happened in June of 2012, which is the same month that we started this podcast.
That's kind of weird. So this kind of opens the door for a lot of kids that are now adults that were sentenced to life.
Rod was 16 when he committed the murders. Years later, of course, he's an adult, and it's got to be tough for people looking at an adult who had committed murders many years before saying, yeah, he used to be a kid, but he's not anymore. He's the same person.
Well, according to Rod, he's more rehabilitated. And so now we have Rod Farrell coming back and fighting for his freedom. So he is due for a resentencing. This could go many ways. It's unconstitutional to give a minor a life sentence, but it is constitutional to give them a sentence that has eligibility for parole within a lifetime. So they could hand him a 40-year sentence. Now, he's already spent a lot of time behind bars, so that is applied to the resentencing. The other thing that could happen is they could say, well, it's 15 years, time served, bye, and he walks free. Rod says that he no longer has any delusions of being a vampire. He is not that same immature kid. And I will say that his current interviews, he doesn't come off the way he does. But has he shown any remorse? Has he shown any sort of accountability? Just because he's not coming off like the arrogant little punk that he was doesn't really say a whole lot of his attitude today.
Well, detectives and prosecutors, they didn't buy into this vampire business. They really saw this as just a bad kid. They didn't think vampirism had anything to do with this at all. That just happened to be what he was doing at the time. But they think these murders have nothing to do with that.
You know, not to be morbid, but if he thought he was a vampire, why didn't he attack them like a vampire? He's using a crowbar. He's just murdering people. So, yeah. You know, he didn't bite them. He didn't cut them and drink their blood. He didn't do anything like that. This is just blunt force trauma to the head with a crowbar.
Yeah, and he also had a quote where he talked about how he felt like a god when he had committed these murders, but if he was actually a god, then what was he doing in court? See, to me, this vampire thing, that was just a way for him to spend his time. I think there were a lot of people convinced that this is what he really wanted. I really don't think so. This was just someone out of control.
I think it was his way to control others.
Well, I know in interviews, Jaden had talked about how the only time that he would advocate for violence is if someone attacked one of his clan members. They would have to get revenge. And they talked about what would happen if that had gone down. And he talked about they didn't like guns. They thought that was too easy. That if someone needed punishing, they needed to be punished personally. And that required either their fists or maybe some instrument to bludgeon them to death. And so that's what they had talked about. You know, if we have to, we'll beat someone to death. So that right there, even the guy that said he didn't advocate for violence, if he had to, that's how they were going to do it. And he and Rod had that discussion a number of times.
The other members of this clan, Charity and Dana, they've been paroled and released. So they are now walking around free. Scott Anderson had his sentence reduced from life to 40 years. He could get out as soon as 2032. This is how we're treating the minors in this group. And we have yet to hear what they're going to resentence Rod Farrell with.
It sounds like family members who were talking about these sentences and about the releases, it almost feels like they're all looking at Rod. This is your fault. And that's who they really want to make sure stays in prison.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, even with Anderson, who went inside the house, he didn't do it. When they asked Schaefer, who didn't go on this trip, he said, you know, I would have stopped him. And, you know, people are like, yeah, right. You know, you weren't there in that moment where everyone was sort of falling in line. But Rod is the one that planned it. Rod is the one that beat the parents and killed them. So he's the one that should suffer the greatest consequence. If they would have resentenced Anderson as time served, I don't know if I would have had that big of a problem with that. And I don't think the family members would have either.
Well, the problem with Anderson was that he went along with it. It's not like he turned Rod in. So I think he got sick while he was inside the house, but that might have just been a reaction. He didn't choose to go against Rod, who was his clan leader. Now, as far as Schaefer, we talked about how he didn't go and how his mom had put him in treatment. Well, she's the one that told her son straight up, you would not have stopped anything because Rod's crazy and Rod was going to do whatever he was going to do. So I give her a lot of credit, Rose Bunch, because she's the one that kept her kid from going. She had a good sense about where this was headed, and she wanted to keep her son safe. And so if you see any interviews with Schaefer, it seems like he's learned a lot, but I don't think he still understands just how much power Rod had. I think he looks back at this and thinks, oh, I could have done something, maybe because he would have wanted to. If you think about it, there were other people with Rod at the time who saw him get back into the car covered in blood, and they didn't do anything, at least not right away.
Schaefer dodged a bullet. He needs to get that through his head. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all like to think that we would do something if we were in a situation where something bad happened or was about to happen. That's easy to say and probably more difficult to do. If they resentence Rod, and just going off of what they did with Anderson here, I can't imagine them letting him out at any reasonable age. You know what I mean? They'll want to keep him in as long as they can. So if they give him time where he gets out as an old man, let's say that, can you imagine that he can go back into society?
I guess I just think, well, what's the point of prison if it's not to rehabilitate? Is it just for punishment at this point?
Well, I think there are people that would argue that Rod Farrell is one of those people that cannot be rehabilitated.
But did we try? I mean, I'm not saying I want the dude out walking around freely. I'm not saying that. It just comes down to, if we can throw juveniles away for life, well, there's no mitigating factors now. It's just all about punishment.
Yeah, the question here is, if you take 40 years from him and then release him, have you really spared a minor anything? He's so far away from being a minor at that point.
Yeah.
I think this is a difficult case because, to me, Rod has never shown any remorse. And I think part of the problem is we all want that. Even if someone's lying, right? We want to hear that. We want to feel like if you might get released back into the public, that you're not going to be a killer again. But he seemed to take great satisfaction in this. You could say, well, he was a kid. He's probably just trying to act tough because maybe deep down he was scared. I get that. But I haven't really seen anything out of this guy that says that he's reformed or that he wants to reform.
Well, he says that he has a job waiting for him and a loving family waiting for him. But we can look at a lot of juveniles who have received a life sentence and get, I guess, more sympathetic stories.
Who's this loving family?
It's a girlfriend he's met while he was in prison.
Well, just based on what happened with Anderson, I don't expect him to get a very good resentencing result. I would say in many instances, I do feel like if you're a minor and you do something horrible, that you need treatment. You know, as a society, our best bet is to try and invest in making you a better person, if we can do that. I believe in that. But Rod seems so sure of himself. And I think it's going to be difficult for the public at large to buy into this, that he's someone that could be a good member of society.
Thank you.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.